Marriage is our topic for this particular portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Kimberly Holmes, CEO of Marriage Helper. Listen to this. Bill and Melinda Gates say that their split will have no impact on Gates Foundation. But in contrast to that, Kimberly Holmes, our guest we'll talk to in just a moment, says this. Unfortunately, the likelihood of that happening is very low. Divorce always has a bigger impact than people expect. Everyone in the Gates family circle will be affected by this decision, their children, the work they do, and eventually American society. The reality is divorce creates separation in every area of a couple's life. They will no longer have a unified vision of the work they do. Their visions and efforts will be different. End quote from Kimberly Holmes. Kimberly, why don't you wax eloquent about divorce and how it really does impact everybody involved, not just the couple.
We're going to see it on a very large scale when it comes to Bill and Melinda and what's occurring with them. The what is happening is they believe that they can just separate the unity of their marriage and continue to run a foundation that has a global impact without any issues. Well, the truth of the matter is it doesn't matter if you're in the bedroom or the boardroom. If the relationship is broken, then that is going to translate to every area of the relationship. When people divorce, not only do we know from research that that has a profound impact on the individuals who experience it, we see 188% increase in the likelihood of depression, increases of feeling lonely, of losing your social circle, all of those things. But then when we look at the impact on children, it doesn't matter how old the children are, older or younger, looking at grandkids, we see that there is a significant impact on their parents' divorce on them. And then when it comes to an organization that a couple may be running together, people will feel the need to pick sides. It happens in every divorce. And so there is going to be a split in what is going on in the Gates Foundation. And we're going to begin to see that we may never see it in the American public, but there will be a decrease in the amount of impact that they are able to make, just like any couple would experience when they split up. The impact that they have together as a couple splits as well.
And what is your stake in all this? I mean, basically you are involved in trying to essentially help couples not get divorced. Is that the gist?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, tell us about if Bill or Melinda came to you and said, you know, Kimberly, we need your help, what would you say?
I would say that there absolutely is help and hope for their marriage
to
be saved and put back together.
Okay, even
and
now.
Stronger than ever, even now. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely, even now. So the majority of couples that we work with, they're already filed for divorce. There may be an affair currently going on, and we still see over 70% of those couples working it out and staying together and have a stronger marriage at the end. Because it all boils down to this. There's a process to falling in love. If you follow the process, then you can fall in love or fall back in love with your spouse. If you stop following that process, then you will fall out of love, even if you don't mean to. Probably what has happened over the course of the past 27 years with Bill and Melinda is they've stopped following the process to fall in love. They've probably grown apart. I mean, they said they grew apart. They said that they don't see themselves growing together in the future. But the truth of the matter is, and even what research shows, is that a couple can learn to do that again. And there's a process for doing that. That's what we teach. But there's absolutely hope. You fell in love once, you can fall in love again, and you can make it better than it ever was before.
But don't you think also, as far as falling in love, that it's not just feelings? The real thing to me is commitment. And I say this as one who, by the grace of God, has been married almost 41 years. Next month, it'll be 41 years. And I'm grateful for that. And when we made a commitment and we enjoy each other. I mean, it's just, so we made the commitment. And some, I remember when somebody said, you know, it's hard work, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, no, it's not. It's actually quite fun.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because recent research has come out that has actually divided marriage into two different eras. And everything before 1950s, 1960s was classified as what they call the commitment-based era of marriage. And that is where the couple decided that the relationship was the most important thing, and therefore they would make decisions and do things in order for what was best for the relationship. And divorce was a last option. After the 1950s, 60s, we've now moved into what research is classifying as expressive individualist marriages, which basically means that people are wanting to seek their own personal development, and they're seeing marriage as only a vehicle for that to happen. And when the marriage stops making them happy, or if they feel like they aren't meeting their goals within their marriage, then that is sufficient reason to leave the marriage and move on. This is terrifying. Number one, because we as humans are created to be in a long-term committed relationship with someone. The very basis of attachment theory, which is a very, very strong field in psychology that shows how people attach and feel secure in relationships and therefore are their best self because of it, is all about knowing that someone in your life that you have committed to is going to be there for you and not leave you. That is what we need and crave as humans. And so when we start to use marriage as something that is fungible, that we can just replace one person for the next as long as we're following what makes us happy, then we begin to really miss the point of what a long-term committed relationship is for. And it's not just that we feel happy. Our feelings change every day. Doing what's best for ourselves and our family, that's what's best for us and for society.
What is your comment about, say, the successful man who's maybe in his 40s or 50s, and in effect, he cashes out the wife of his youth, divorces her, and trades her in for a younger model? I mean, I hate to say it like that, but you see that phenomenon, and it's very tragic.
It is very tragic, again, because people are making decisions based on the feelings they feel in the moment, and not necessarily thinking about how they're going to feel about that in 10 months, 10 years, or the legacy that it would create in 10 decades. And so are there times in people's life? Yes, a lot of people call it the midlife crisis, which is basically, midlife crisis is not really a grounded psychological term, but it's just a term people use to talk about a life change that most people experience in their life of when they start realizing that there's a loss in their life. It might be a loss of a person or a job or a dream or an expectation. And so people can begin to want to change their current reality in order to meet this dream that they wanted, so to say. And so a lot of people end up doing that. That's when people start to make bad decisions about themselves or their marriage or their career during that time, because they're losing sight of the future and the vision and the commitment of the marriage that they're in. When in reality, if they stay committed and work on this one, that is what's going to give the greatest feelings of satisfaction and all of the good things that we want in our lives by staying committed in our relationship.
So in the example that you mentioned earlier, actually it's not an example, but you said that you work with couples even where they've had the, adultery, frankly, that kind of breakdown. Mm-hmm. And yet, by God's grace, you're able to, in some cases, these people recommit and they stay married. And I remember reading in a book, I think it was the one by Maggie Gallagher and Peggy Waite about why marriage is so good for society. I don't even remember the name. The Case for Marriage. That's what it's called, The Case for Marriage. And I think they said something to the effect of couples that work through the problems. They seemed like they were headed for divorce, but they worked through the problems. Even where there was adultery, 5 years later, those couples were so much happier than those who went ahead, got divorced, and in some cases they got divorced and remarried and then divorced again and so forth. But anyway, those who worked it out were so much happier that they had done that rather than, bail out of the marriage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because think about what happens when people, whether it's an affair, addiction, whatever it might be that's the issue, when you decide you're going to try and make this work, that you're committed to the relationship, then you do things like forgive, which is huge. Even research shows us that forgiveness makes leaps and bounds towards satisfaction in a relationship. And the couples who are more likely to forgive and forgive more have happier and more satisfying relationships. And so when forgiveness happens, when you're looking for restoration and redemption and you're doing the things to make the relationship better, by being committed to it, then yes, you are going to be more satisfied with it long term, because instead of just throwing away what was broken, you're fixing it. It's similar to how I read a book several years ago. Oh, goodness, I can't remember the name of it, but it was about how millionaires think differently. And one of the things it said was they invest in furniture that is higher quality, and when it breaks, they fix it. They don't just throw it away and find something new. They fix what they have. And that's what we should be doing with our marriages. That's what that commitment-based model of marriage is. We fix it. We don't throw it away. We don't have divorce as a first option. It's a last resort, and we do everything we can to try and fix it and make it work. And that is what leads to boundlessly satisfying relationships.
I tell you what, without mentioning any names, please, could you tell us an example, a story of, you know, okay, there was a couple I was dealing with, and here's what happened. You know, one of these positive stories where they worked through some bad stuff, but they, you know, it turned out well at the end, at the other end.
Here's my favorite one. Back before I was born, but this story is really good, so just listen to it. But before I was born, there was a couple named Joe and Alice, and they had been married for 15 years. Joe was a pastor of a church and ended up deciding that he would be happier without his wife and being with someone else. So he divorced his wife and left her for 3 years with their two daughters at that time. Those 3 years, he would tell you himself that he did things he never thought he would do, went places he never thought he'd be. He was chasing this happiness that he thought he wanted, but there was just emptiness on the other side. At the end of that 3 years, he called his previous wife, Alice, back and said, "Will you take me back?" Everyone in her life said, "Don't do it. You can't trust him. You're already moved on. You're dating. Why would you want to go back to that?" But she said, "I knew in my heart that he was a good man who had done some bad things. And I knew the right thing was to take him back and try and make this work." And so they did. They remarried. They almost divorced again, but they said, "We're committed this time. We're going to figure out what went wrong and how to fix it." And they did. 3 years after that, they had their third child, who is me, and as a celebration of their remarriage. And they then established an organization that exists to save marriages and strengthen families. So my parents experienced this. I would not be alive today if it weren't for the forgiving redemption power that my mother demonstrated toward my father and the commitment that they had to make it work. And because of them doing the right thing, putting it back together, having this amazing relationship, they also started an organization that has affected over 300,000 people and has saved countless amounts of marriages.
And what is that organization? MarriageHelper.com?
Marriage Helper.
So
yes,
MarriageHelper.com. So you're actually picking up and, you know, continuing the legacy of your parents. But forgiveness in Christ obviously was a key to all this. And we have about a minute left. So go ahead and give us a closing thought in a minute or half left, you know, especially in reference to forgiveness in Christ.
One of the things that we see from the heart of God is that he is all about redemption and restoration. That is what he did for us on the cross, when he did the greatest act of forgiveness and the greatest act of love. And I believe that that is the example that we should look for in our own marriages. When we are saying, how can we be more forgiving, more Christ-like, more redemption, we should be focusing on the vision, the end goal of unity, of coming together, of having a marriage that is honoring to Christ, not just something that is making us happy, but something that's moving us to be more in the image of God. I love how research backs up every single part of what the Bible tells us. And so everything we teach at Marriage Helper is research-based, but all of it fits into exactly what Jesus has done for us. And so, yes, we forgive. We encourage forgiveness, because in forgiveness there is power, and that power leads to redemption, and that redemption leads to complete fulfillment in relationships.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Again, this is Kimberly Holmes, CEO of Marriage Helper, marriagehelper.com. All the best. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Jerry.